Rabbitohs Radio is proudly brought to you by Bourke Street Bakery. They pride themselves on making real food from the best ingredients, the old-fashioned way, by hand, with dedication and love. Baked and raised from humble beginnings in Surry Hills, Bourke Street Bakery has grown to become one of Sydney's most iconic food destinations, with 14 stores across Sydney, open 7 days a week. BourkeStreetBakery.com.au.
Hey guys, it's Cameron Murray here. Make sure you listen to Rabbitohs Radio, the next big up-and-coming thing.
Rabbitohs Radio podcast, Grant Chappell, Steve Maven, Darren Brown.
Chaps is red hot here, so my phone was running hot there for a while, but...
Could you catch him?
Well, only if I got a bit of a start.
It's great for rugby league, but more importantly, it's great for the mighty Rabbitohs.
Welcome to another edition of Rabbitohs Radio. My name is Grant Chappell. I'm joined by two former Rabbitohs, Darren Brown, Steve Maven. What's doing, boys?
Hello, chaps. Hello, Brownie.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Well, it's been another eventful week in the NRL, and things are on the up. The 28th of May, kick-off time, and the boys are back at training, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, it's all systems go, boys.
Yeah, it's great news. Everything's positive. People are starting to smile again. Businesses are starting to open. The beaches are open. You can go to the parks.
Bit a lot at the end of the tunnel, Mavo.
Only because we've been doing the right thing.
Although they tried to throw us under the bus last night. Daily Telegraph. Oh, we got the coronavirus and the flu. I was at work at 11 o'clock last night doing night shift, and South put out a statement. You don't see them put statements out 11 p.m. at night, and they put out a statement saying all our boys have been cleared of the coronavirus, and it's business as usual, boys.
What's on the show this week, chaps?
Mate, we got a big interview with former Rabbitoh, Bo Champion, who's done a lot in the community over the years. He's going to give us an insight into his cousin, GI, and how all that transpired, him leaving the club and GI coming along, and a bit about the Carian Indigenous Foundation, South Cares. He'll cover a fair bit. He's a real champion. Maybe I had a chat to Ello about some of those structural changes in the business of South. Some of those appointments, we'll touch on that later on. We've also got Rabbitoh of the Week and NRL News.
Okay, let's move on to the shout-outs brought to you by Export Freight Systems. Now, our Wharfie Dream Team that we spoke about last week, it's gone viral.
Went wild, didn't it?
Our good mate Brian Fletcher spoke about it on Rugby League Live with Matty Johnson and Hindy. So just have a listen to this little bit of audio from that.
Got a phone call during the week. Steve Maven, the great Steve Maven, played for South Sydney, and Darren Brown.
Yep. Yeah. They got the Rabbitohs radio, don't they? They got the podcast.
Yeah, it's good. And Chappo, it is a good listen.
He's a great fella, Darren Brown.
Brownie was, I tell you what, Brownie was a very, very good ball player. Like, he was like an old school lock forward. I used to love him. His pet play was coming from the open to the blind.
Yeah, a little swing around the short side.
Oh, it's bringing back.
I've had some scallywags in South Sydney over there.
Look at him. Bang.
Nice play.
Yeah, he's good. The brown man.
Oh, another dummy.
Loves a dummy.
So what about that? It's a popular show, Rugby League Live.
Yeah, it is. And a big thank you to Fletch, Matty and Hindy, who are big supporters of the show, the Rabbitohs Radio podcast. And they had a bit of a discussion about the Wharfie Dream Team. And there's been a bit of discussion not only at Fox Sports, it's been at DP World as well, a bit of controversy, and a lot of people thought they should have been in there, and they weren't.
Well, they didn't understand the criteria, but
100%, chaps. 100%.
Now Fletch outlined that straight away, didn't he?
Yeah.
And they spoke about Peter Camray. I couldn't quite get it right, but it's, we call him Peter Camray. We think that's how it's pronounced.
His son's with the Tigers now, playing in the halves at SG Ball. I went to watch him. When the season was on this year. He's a good little player too.
Yeah, good little player.
I have heard that. And they said that Pete played at the Tigers and Illawarra, I think. But according to the Rugby League project, it was just the Tigers. And they mentioned that Big Richie McKell played schoolboy footy with Matty Johns. Now, we didn't know that. I've worked with him for 14 years and didn't know that.
I seen him this morning. I hit him up about it. He was starting, I was finishing. Yeah, and that's the case, He said that.
And, Brownie, they showed a bit of footage of you in your heyday.
So, back in the day,
yeah.
So, a few little ball skills there, a bit of speed.
Yes.
You had a bit of split at Penrith, didn't you? A little, little double show.
I was out running David Peachy there, I think.
Yeah, you loved that dummy.
I loved the dummy.
Yeah. Okay, so just...
And the boys highlighted that. And that probably ties in a little bit with... Now, the shout-outs are brought to you by Export Freight System, the Wharfie team.
Yes.
That ties right in there, Ian. Shout-out to you, Ian. Hope you're going well up there, mate.
And we had a message from Matt Dobe, who's Chris Emery's nephew, who we work with Chris Emery. And he had an idea to pick a South team from local juniors, the best of since the Super League era. Now, we're not going to do it this week. We're going to throw it out to the listeners. And if anyone can give us some...
What positions are we looking for, mate?
So, well, so what's the criteria there? So they've got to be a South junior...
Yeah, yep. Clear that up. Clear that up.
Yep, South Junior since the Super League era. So that's about since 1997.
97, 98.
So
yep.
me and you aren't eligible, Brownie, not eligible. Unfortunately.
Okay.
Now, Matt's given us number one, Alex Johnson. Number two, Merritt. Three, Champo. Just had him. We're having him on the show today. Number five, Walker. Well, Dylan could be in the centre, so we need him.
I could think of another player that could slot in there. Lee Hookey. He was a good young player.
Well, he could have the centre spot.
Killed it in that 98, 99 season.
We've got a vacant centre spot, so yeah. Mm-hmm. We've got Sato at six, Renault at seven. Now we've got a number eight vacant
spot. You could put Walker at six and Sato in the back row. So there's a couple of different options there. So
Craig Wing, Jason Clark, Cameron Murray. So
Shannon McPherson might slot in there somewhere, mate.
A couple of spots to fill.
Hard man.
Now also we've
got... The Huntsman? Was the Huntsman a...
The Huntsman?
The Huntsman, yeah. He certainly fits the criteria, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So Paul McNicholas. Shout out.
Had a good wingspan too, didn't he?
Shout out to you, the Huntsman. Now also Carol Klemer sent us a message telling us how wonderful the Jason Demetriou chat was. Now, we're sorry we had a bit of a late reply there, but thanks for listening, Carol. Also, our man, Loose Man, on Twitter, sent us a message saying, smashing show again, and he could listen to Tugger forever.
Yeah, good on you, Loose Man.
Well, Tugger's a good man. He's very passionate about the mighty Rabbitohs. He's got a lot of good stories, and I could probably sit there and listen to Tugger all day myself.
I don't know about forever, but all day maybe.
So I enjoyed Tugger's interview last week. I really did.
It was a good chat, wasn't it?
He's a champion.
And we've had really some positive feedback on the chats. But first of all, we just want to thank all our listeners. We hope you're all getting through this coronavirus fit, happy and healthy. And thank you to everyone for the positive feedback on our interviews with JD, Tugger and all the other ones. And we look forward to bringing you plenty more interviews this season and beyond.
Just a quick one on Tugger. I was watching I think it was Adam Hawes from Channel 10. He's been doing a few interviews with people and putting them up on their media. He had Greg McCullum on, and he said, he gave, who's your top five biggest sledges that give it to you? And who do you think was number one?
100%.
It was Tugger, of course, yeah. So number one.
Yeah, 100%.
Who do you think was number one?
Oh, it'd have to be Tugger.
Yeah. Like I said, no one got barred, even us, his teammates.
It was good to hear a referee talk as well. A little bit of different perspective, boys.
Yeah,
well,
McCullum, wasn't it? Greg McCullum. You got a shout-out there, chaps?
I do, mate. This one's a bit of a sad story, actually. One of my best mates passed away due to suicide a couple of years ago, 2018. And before he passed away, his mum was diagnosed with cancer, pancreatic cancer, and she lost her battle with cancer yesterday, so... A bit emotional thinking about that. But yes, rest in peace, Gail. You're a beautiful woman. And I'll tell you one thing about Gail and my mate Ricky, who was a son. They were as mad South supporters as they come.
Where are they from, chaps?
They're from the area. They had a housing commission out there at Namajura Flats, out there near La Perouse. A lot of people will know that.
Yeah, Little Bay Road there, yep.
And I think she ended up residing there at around Elphinstone Road Housing Commission the last 15 years. And she was a great woman, and I'll tell you, I promise you one thing, Gail, like I did to Ricky, I'll make sure we look over your two beautiful grandchildren.
I was going to say, I was just going to touch on that, chaps. You do a great job with Ricky's young kids there, and sorry to hear.
It's a sad story, and that pancreatic cancer took my mum as well in 2017. It's a horrible, horrible disease, and it takes people very quickly, so yeah, it's devastating news.
And I just mentioned... Ricky, who he lost his battle with depression due to suicide. If anyone is feeling depression at any stage and some mental illness, I can't recommend it anymore to give Rise Foundation Australia a call or jump on their website.
Benny, yeah, Benny Higgs.
Benny Higgs will look after.
Yep.
Benny Higgs will look after you.
He's a good man, Ben.
We'll put a link to that in the episode webpage, so you can press pause now, scroll down, click on that, and there'll be a phone number there or an email. Okay, let's move on to Rabbitohs news, brought to you by the juniors. And the big news was that Latrell Mitchell, Liam Knight, and Adam Reynolds all had COVID-19 tests, and the news has come through that they're all clear. Also, Trent Robertson, he was cleared of COVID-19 as well. And yeah, so that's good news for the boys to come through clear. Everyone thought, oh, hang on, Latrell's gone to the farm, and now he might have caught the corona.
Yeah, well, boy, you're probably going to get a lot of this over the next few weeks. It's any, you know, flu-like symptoms, and bang, you're straight off to get tested. Straight away, without a doubt. Don't even go past.
Even pre-COVID-19, if a player had the flu, they'd isolate him anyway, so I don't think it's anything different.
Yeah.
Just like Wayne said just before we broke up for the COVID-19.
Yeah. So if you're feeling a little bit tired and you don't feel like training, just come in with a runny nose.
that's it. Nah,
but look, it's not a good time to get a cold.
No.
Just a basic cold.
And just on Trent Robinson, boys, I thought he looked a bit off for a few years.
He hasn't got a good colour about him.
I reckon he should get a second opinion, boys.
Yeah. Something about that whole team. They're just not, don't seem right.
Well, Bondi is a targeted area for COVID-19. Yeah. A lot of cases down there. They do a lot of testing down there.
Yep.
So there's something going on down there.
Yeah, shout out to our mate Jules Parry, Mad Rooster.
Yeah.
Well, the other big news, Mavo, especially out of the Rabbitohs, is they finalised their senior football management structure. Now, you had a chat to Ello. You want to give us a briefing on that, mate?
Yeah, I gave Mark Ellison a call yesterday just to congratulate him because he's been moved to the head of football at South.
Okay.
And it's a restructure. And what he said to me is that they've made it a collaborative approach. So Blake Solly's in charge, and Ello, along with Brock Schaefer, are sharing some roles. Now, Ello is going to do the football, and Brock's going to do more of the operational side, and they both report to Blake. Okay. And a couple of other details, I asked him what's going on with training, and they had a meeting yesterday about the COVID protocols, and they're going to start training on Wednesday, so that's tomorrow as we go to air, under level 2 guidelines from the government. This means only limited contact in the weights room and only a few people on the field at a time. And then next week they're going to move to level 3, which obviously will mean contact.
Well, they start contact Saturday. I listened to Craig Bellamy get interviewed on Fox League Live last night.
Okay.
And Saturday they up the ante in terms of contact. And like Bellamy said, they won't go into full contact straight away. They have to get their bodies ready and adjusted and accustomed to start taking a few knocks and a bit of a battering here and there. But yeah, by this time next week, they'll be probably running opposed sessions against each other and running full contact.
So that's good news. And a few more details are that the club can only have 32 players and 18 staff. So that means that a couple of South players have had to stay home. I don't know who they actually are, but once all this passes, we can get you back in there. Now, on game day, it's only 20 players and 12 staff plus a doctor. And if we're at home, it's 2 doctors. Now, I also asked Ello about the draw, and he doesn't know. And I said, well, do you think we're going to be playing the Roosters in that next round game? And he said, well, he doesn't know, but he thinks if anyone's got any sense in the NRL, they'll leave that game because it's a blockbuster.
Mm. Well, you'd probably have a couple of blockbusters first up. You'd probably, the Cowboys and the Broncos.
Put the cat amongst the pigeons.
It's always a good derby.
Yeah.
Get a bit of hype about the first round.
Oh, for sure.
The Raiders and the Storm are always a good.
Oh, there's no bigger clash than the Rabbitohs v the Roosters, boys. Whoa. And I'm just off the back of what you've said there. You've had a chat to Ello, and you guys obviously played with him. You're great mates with him. That's a big win for Rabbitohs Radio and all you listeners out there, because we'll be getting the first-hand information. Nothing against Richo, but we didn't really have a relationship with Richo as he's moved on. And congratulations to Ello and Brock. Brock's a good fella. We've got to know him, some of these press conferences and whatnot.
And Blake.
Yeah, Blake.
And Blake.
We're so lucky to have Blake there. And also Shannon Donato. You know, I thought maybe he might have lost his spot, but I'm glad he didn't, because he is another bloke who's...
And they're all supporters of the show.
Big help for the show.
And one thing the Rhino said, our mate Mark Ellison, is that the club's in a great position financially, and the people they've got there running the show, the team's coming through.
Got a good squad, yeah.
Everything's looking good.
Well, I know one thing. Did you see the boys' faces that when they walked into training? There was a couple of pictures on South Sydney socials.
Yep.
All the smile on their faces. They're happy to be back.
Yep. And there's a lot of smiles on everyone's faces now. Hopefully, if you're out there and you're getting your job back, if you haven't had any work, get through all this drama and we'll be back to where we were before.
And I might have some exclusive signing news next week, boys.
Wow.
I'll let you in on that.
Kept
one
that
next
dark.
Week. Yeah, well, you got to these days, mate, I tell you. You got blokes like the mole out there?
Scoop, yeah.
Scoop Chapel.
Stalking you?
Scoop
yeah,
Chapel.
I might have something for you next week anyway, boys.
You didn't get that from your mate Wayne at all, did you?
No, I haven't
Wayne
seen
Bennett,
Wayne.
The great Wayne Bennett.
Is this person you're talking about playing rugby union?
No.
So it's not Ben Teo.
No.
Okay.
So let's move on to our interview with Bo Champion, brought to you by Rise Foundation Australia.
A champion. He eclipses them all with a try.
That's lovely stuff. Lovely set move. Simple for Bo Champion.
Okay, Rabbitohs Radio listeners, we got former Rabbitoh on the line. Bo Champion, welcome to Rabbitohs Radio, mate.
Good to be a part of it, boys.
No worries, Champo. Now, where are you from and what was it like growing up there?
Mate, my family originally from Kempsey, up on the mid-north coast, but I grew up predominantly in Sydney. I started out at La Perouse and then moved over to Coogee, so I've always been an eastern suburbs boy and a South Sydney man.
Did you grow up a Rabbitohs fan, mate?
Yeah, I was a tragic, like a lot of kids in the area, obviously playing in the local competitions. And back then, we still had South. It was around that, 97 through to 99 period. And, you could look at my favourite players like Tricky and all them sort of blokes. So, obviously, growing up in the area, rugby league was, a big part of my life. And, my dream as a kid was always just to play for the Rabbitohs. So, I was very fortunate enough to do that.
Okay. Did you have any success in the junior reps, mate? Tell us a bit about your junior rep career, mate.
Yeah, we did. So, obviously, I played with La Perouse and then Southeastern. But when we got to the junior rep competition, throughout the 13s through to 15s, it used to be the junior bunnies, obviously. We only used to play a couple of games. And we'd play teams like Penrith and Parramatta and West. And unfortunately, when we played them sides, they're all monsters, So, we didn't have a lot of success throughout that period. But once we got to the Harold Matthews, we ended up making it through to the semi-finals. And then in SG Ball, we made it through to the grand final, which were beaten by Newcastle. Newcastle had players like Jared Mullen, Cade Snowden, blokes like that who went on to play NRL. But it was really good because all of the boys from the local area, there's probably three teams. It was sort of Southeastern, Kenzo and Mascot. And we'd all sort of combined into one team. And we built like a really good connection because we were together since the 13s and then through to Harold Matthews and SG Ball. We built like a really good camaraderie and all the boys knew each other and we had some really talented football players, especially local. So when we put us all together in one team, we got close, but we just couldn't get over the line. So, yeah, we made an SG Ball grand final. Unfortunately, couldn't win it.
Yeah, Champ, Brownie, mate, you just mentioned that you had a talented team there. Who were some of the players that came through with you?
Well, back in the day, Troy Boston was a really good player locally around the area, but I came through with guys like Buddy Gordon played actually upper grade every year. So Buddy Gordon was, Yaleen Gordon was a year younger, but he was an absolute freak. Eddie Payer played a year up above, Eddie Pettibourne. And then I was fortunate enough to go through and play with the likes, obviously, Sadal Merritt, who are a bit older than me. But guys like Richie Williams, who was a freak talent back then, I think
we played in like a six or seven week competition.
Yeah, the Poss. We played in like a 6 or 7 week competition and he scored like 14 tries. And Johnny Amato was our coach and it was good entertainment, put it that way, because we had some, even at, 15 and 16, all the boys growing up in there, we had some pretty loose characters. So it was actually pretty funny having Johnny as our coach to keep them all in line and motivate us. And that was some really good times. And actually, Tricky was actually our trainer at the time. So we were super fit. I remember we used to do Saturday mornings. We'd get down to Coogee Beach and do the Coogee to Bronte and back.
Yeah.
And we'd do the sprints once we got to Bronte. And Tricky used to lead them all the way. And I don't know what Tricky did on Friday night, but he didn't smell too good on Saturday.
Yeah, Bo, it's Mavo here. Blake Champion. We all work with him. He's a good young kid. How were you related to The champ, I call him.
Yeah, so Blake's my uncle. So my dad and Blake are obviously brothers. And that's probably where I got my real connection to rugby league, because when I'm about 4 or 5 years younger than Blake, but what I used to do was every weekend was I'd go and watch Blake play, Clegg and Matthews Carp. And, you know, and then on Sundays I'd go and dad would coach a team and I'd go and watch his team play, or, you know, something along them lines. So it was sort of ingrained in me. Rugby league was like my whole weekend. And then during the week at school, it was play football at school. And I was very fortunate to go to Endeavour Sports High, which probably gave me a bit of a upper hand in regards to my rugby league career, going to Endeavour Sports High, because it was a sports high school, and because I did focus so much on rugby league, you know, it taught me what I needed to do if I wanted to become an NRL player.
Was you living out there, sir?
No, so that was my commitment. I lived at Coogee, and I used to catch a bus, then a train, then a bus to school every day and back. But that's what, you know, if I wanted to play rugby league and I wanted to be the best, give myself the best chance of being a rugby league player, I had to make that commitment. It was about an hour and a half every day on the bus, train and bus, but I think it was worth it in the end.
And how did you go with that school competition out there? Because they were quite a successful side, like you said.
And the thing was is that, even when you got to the NRL level, when you're around or playing with other good players or training with other good players, your intensity at training is on another level. So I was playing with, we had a New South Wales team selected for our age group, and I think out of our 17 starting team, I think 11 got picked in the New South Wales team. That's how good of a program and team that we had out there. We ended up making it to 2 Arrive Alive grand finals, and we won one. We won the second one. The first one were odds-on favourite. We got beat 30-0. The second one we played Patricia Brothers Blacktown in the grand final, and we ended up winning that one. And I was lucky enough to get the Peter Sterling medal. So that sort of gave me a lot of confidence, you know, coming out of school. But it was also probably a lot of reward for hard work and commitment, and, you know, making that. You know, I went there from year 7 to year 12. And again, just as I said, playing and training with these guys from, a lot of these guys played for the Roosters, or they played for, Balmain or Cronulla. So you got to sort of be with the best of the best at that sort of time in that age group. And you learn a lot from them. Mm. And also they pushed you to be better, because you sort of knew what level you had to be at to want to make, because to make the NRL, it's not easy.
Yeah,
as you guys know.
Yeah, that's right, mate. You were getting taught from a young age coming through that schoolboy system. And was Jeff Hardy involved at the coaching staff there at Endeavour?
Jeff played a huge role. Obviously being Indigenous as well, and seeing the success that Jeff had and the respect that Jeff had, not just from the people at our school, but the people in the area. He's not obviously a big name now. Like, you don't really hear too much, you know, about Jeff. I know he played in a couple of grand finals, but just his approach and his attitude and he just taught you the small things about being a good person, about, you know, the one percenters that are involved with rugby league. You know, one of the rules at school was if you didn't complete your schoolwork or you didn't complete your assignments, you didn't play football. That was one of the rules. So education was pushed upon us pretty hard too. So it wasn't just like, oh, you're just footy players, you just do what you want, you get away with whatever you want. Mm. Jeff, you know, sort of towed the line and we're all in. You know, he got us all in, and we did certain things. Like, we went over to Fiji one year. We played against some local teams over in Fiji. We had trips out to Coonabarabran. But Jeff made it fun. Jeff made it competitive, and, you know, and he took some of his traits of, he was such a smart ball player too, that he taught us a lot more about the game quicker than a lot of other people would learn about the game. So, defensive structures and why this certain play works against certain defenses. And so you're a lot, you know, you were one or two steps ahead of everybody else. And yeah, he played a massive role in my career and a lot of Endeavour boys, because, you know, we go to the Endeavour reunions now. Every year they had their awards nights, and there's NRL players that come out of that school. You know, there'd probably be 30 or 40 minimum over the past 10 years.
Yeah, he's a good man, Jeffra.
Yeah, well, I can confirm that, because Jeff has run the South Oztag for a long time, and he's just one of the best human beings.
Yeah,
anywhere in the world. Yeah, he's just such a gentleman and so genuine, and yeah, just a great bloke.
Yeah, and you're just like, you're attracted to him, you know, like, it's, you know, everyone just wants to be around him because he's got such a good outlook and positive outlook, and he does it for the love. I think he just does it for the love of it. Mm. And he started a really good program out there now with a lot of the Indigenous kids with the Kurinari program, where they bring a lot of Indigenous kids from outside of the areas, from country towns, and they're based in the Southland Shire, and they go to school in the Shire. So he's done so much positive work over the years, and yeah, he's such a good bloke, and he's helped me a lot with my career, and you know, forever thankful.
Mate, Champ, we'll fast forward, mate, to 2005. You made your debut round 18 off the bench. Can you tell us about that game?
Yeah, I can. Well, I'll tell you a little bit. A lot of, you know, we're diehard South fans. We've been there from day one. So I'm very fortunate that I got to see two sides of South. You know, I was an 18-year-old coming through the system where we were wooden spooners 3 years in a row. We didn't have very good training facilities, all that sort of thing. And I was, myself, you know, Stato and Buddy were probably just thrown into the deep end because, unfortunately, the team wasn't doing so well and we needed to sort of look towards the future. So I'd only played two Premier League games leading up to that, and I'd had two really good games, and I got a call and promised that I'm going to play this week off the bench. And I'd only ever trained with the first grade team like once before that. So I didn't even know any of the boys or nothing. So because I'd come through the Jersey Flegg system, and I was, you know, obviously I was so excited and
nervous,
stoked to get an opportunity. And then we played the Sharks on a Saturday night, and I come off the bench and end up setting up the winning try. So it was a good 20 minutes. I remember going back into the sheds and thinking, how good is this? It was so much fun. But then I started to think, oh, my God, I've got to do this again next week. It was sort of like, it was like I'd built up for that one game so much. And then I played, and then we won. It was this feeling. And then when I was in the sheds, and then it wasn't until I left, I was like, I wonder if I'll get picked next week. Oh, yeah, we are. Probably will. We won. And then I'm like, who are we playing? We're playing the Cowboys in North Queensland. And we went to North Queensland, and we beat them as well. So it was a surreal start. But again, I was put in there a lot earlier than what I should have been. Like, I was an 85-kilo, 5'8 at the time, and I wasn't ready for first grade. You know, I was lucky enough to be able to play early on, I wasn't ready. And I think a lot of the guys now just under, you know, they should be. We see these young guys come into the competition now. And even when Dylan Walk come into the competition with us in 2013 or 14. He came into a really good, strong squad, and he was ready, you know. And he'd had that 2 years of preseason under his belt. You know, I'd come from Jersey Flegg and two games in Premier League against men, and then I was 2 weeks later playing against Jonathan Thurston. You know, it was just a different time, and but again, it taught me a lot.
Mate, you obviously touched on that you came in the halves. I can remember that coming off the bench. I remember watching you a few times there. So you came through as a 5'8". Was it a natural progression to head out to the centres as you got bigger and filled out like your dad and your uncle? They're quite tall and big units.
Well, the thing was that at school I played fullback, and at junior reps competition I played 5'8". I got to a point where when Jason Taylor took over, it was around... I think it was in 2006, 2007. I sort of knew I wasn't going to be a 5'8". Like, I just didn't have the kicking game to start with, and ball skills wise, I just wasn't going to make it. So JT then sort of said, well, why don't you try fullback? And after about 12 months at fullback, I knew I didn't have the speed to be a fullback in regards to how much running they did. And, you know, and to be honest with you, I had two blokes ahead of me, David Peachy and Nathan Merritt. So I knew I wasn't going to get a run. And we went over to America to play against Leeds in lead up to one of Russell wanted to do a big thing over in America to advertise rugby league in America.
Jacksonville.
So we went over to America, and I played the first half of fullback, and I was on the bench, and I just said to Jay Tennis, I said, give me a go in the centres. And Keith Senior was the centre for Leeds at the time, and I played 20 minutes, and I felt comfortable out there, and I was like, maybe I'll just give centre a crack. So when we come back, I'd trained all pre-season at fullback. When we come back, I played my first four games in Premier League in the centres. I think I scored like 8 tries in the first 4 games, and unfortunately the NRL team didn't have a good start to the year. So I got an opportunity in the centres, and that's just where I ended up being. And I sort of had to work out and develop what I was going to do as a centre too, because it wasn't like I had blinding speed like a Jennings or had a fin like English. So I had to work out what was going to be my strength and what I could just contribute to the team, not so much around, you know, being a natural centre. So, you know, obviously running them lines and hitting them holes as hard as I could was something that really paid off for me.
I was going to say, champ, you used to hit a couple of good holes there, mate.
You used to come back against the grain really well, mate. And it was fruitful for you.
It was just the thing with it too is I had Sutto inside me, so because Sutto's such a big frame and such a big individual, is that when you're a centre, if you've got a bigger guy inside you coming at you, you've got to half plant your feet and half get ready to tackle him, because if you're on the back foot and he's coming at you, then he's obviously going to be able to, you know, get over the advantage line. So
a created opportunity is for you.
Exactly. So a lot of the time I'd say to Sutto, you know, go at him, I'm straight outside you, or go at the second bloke and I'm outside him. So a lot of the time it was the guy inside you or outside you that could help you with them holes. But I just thought to myself, this is what my goal is, just hit the holes as hard as I can and hope they turn in. So
speaking of that, sorry to cut you off, but
you're right.
We just ask everyone about their first try in first grade, so this is leading into it nicely for it.
Yeah, well, as I said, my first NRL game was in 2015. 2005, and I had a horrific run with injuries from, you know, as soon as I come into NRL to when I retired. I had four ankle recos, a knee reco, shoulder reco, wrist reco. That's seven recos, and this was all in a time span. And every time I was starting to get going, the injuries just unfortunately just, and these weren't just 6 week injuries. These are 6 months at a time job.
100%. Yeah.
So coming in 2005, I played 2005. I had a bad ankle injury in 2006, and I played 8 games that year, getting injections in my ankle every week just to play. And that's at 19 years old. And then in 2007, I only played 1 game the whole season. So
was that through injury too, champ?
That was more so not being able to find a position in the team and probably form and lack of confidence.
Yeah.
And again, I was tossing up between being a 5'8 and being a fullback, and you know, in that year in Premier League, we made it to the grand final. So I still had a really good season, but I couldn't crack the NRL team. And the NRL team ended up making the 8 for the first time in years under JT that year.
Mm.
So it wasn't until 2008 where I got my opportunity, and I ended up scoring my first NRL try against the Sharks on a Monday night. I still remember it was in the left hand corner. It wasn't anything flashy, but as soon as I scored, I felt a bit of relief because I hadn't scored a try. I'd played NRL since 2005 and I hadn't scored a try in the NRL.
Been a long wait.
Yeah, and you always have these things in the back of your mind, like, what if I don't get another contract? What if that's the end for me? You know, I've worked so hard to get here. But you've always got that inner belief as well, like, but you've that little man on your shoulder. So once I got that monkey off my back, the week later I scored a double. So it was sort of like, once you get one, you can get rolling. I remember sometimes you'd go to games, you'd think, man, if I don't have a good game today, I could be in a bit of trouble, you know? So I wasn't fortunate enough to be one of these guys, like, you know, remember Madge said to us one year, you know, at the start of the year, he said there's two spots that are guaranteed every week. Sam and Greg, the rest of you guys are on notice every week, you know? You're not telling me anything, I don't know.
Nah, well, there's two superstars and everybody else has got to do their best to get there.
And that's what he said. He said it was competition for spots, and whoever plays the best each week will get picked. And he was. He was honest about that. It was, you could play two good games in a row, have a shocker, and he'd drop you know?
Exactly. Well, speaking of superstars, I believe you were in 2010, you played in the inaugural Indigenous All-Stars game.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that, mate?
Yeah, so from 2008 through to 2010, I ended up being able to cement my position in the team, you know, get up around that 40, 50 NRL games. And my initial NRL All-Stars was selected, and Greg was actually picking the centres with Justin Hodges, I believe. And unfortunately, there was a couple of injuries, and I got a phone call and they said, you know, Bo, we're thinking about picking you, and it's between you and somebody else. And then they called me back and they said, Bo, the reason why we've gone for you is just the amount of community work that you've done. He said, like, the amount of community work that you've done within the community and with all the Indigenous kids from here through to Kempsey, and that's been the final straw, you know? Like, we're obviously picking you for the football, but between you and someone else, we're picking you because of all the community work that you've done. And I was ecstatic, you know, because that's all I wanted to do, because represent your people and And to play alongside some of my childhood, you know, idols, the whole entire week was...
Who were some of them, champ? Who were some of them?
Oh, mate, Jonathan Thurston, Preston Campbell.
Yep.
Wendell Saylor was in the team.
Unreal.
It was definitely
the All-Stars, wasn't it?
Well, the thing was, we had a good team, but the team they put us up against, you talk about All-Stars, Jared Hayne was number 20. Yeah. That's how good their team was.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And so it was, and then we got into camp, and from day one, I just thought to myself, we're not going to get beat. I just, you know, and you get this feeling like, we're not going to get beat. It's like we all sat down, we did different programs, and we went out to communities, and we had so much fun, and we bonded together, unreal. And I remember looking at their team, and I'm thinking, you know, they got Israel Folau, they got Cameron Smith, they got all that, but it didn't matter, you know what I mean? Yeah. We had Blake Ferguson, who was a young kid, like, you know what I mean? But he was so young and so fresh, and no one ever heard of Blake Ferguson. You know, we had Jarrell Yee and guys like this. No one had ever heard of these guys, but it was just like Georgie Rose is out, you know, Georgie Rose and Sam Sidon. No one ever heard of a lot of these guys. But
is that Nath Merritt too? And Buddy Gordon?
Nath Merritt, Buddy. Benny Jones actually played off the bench and scored a try. Sowie took an intercept with 5 minutes to go. We led 12-0 and they come back and led, I think, 14-12, and then Sowie took an intercept with 5 minutes to go, and we ended up winning, like, unreal, on the bell sort of thing.
Yeah, but I imagine that when you were standing on the field that very first time, I remember it well. It was just, would have been goosebumps for you, mate.
Yeah. It was just, it meant more to my family. I grew up obviously in Indigenous missions and through the housing commission system, and seeing what going on back at home, Kempsey, and we're doing some really good stuff up there now with some programs. But you see what it means to these people. Like, you, after the game, you see them crying, because it was sort of like they had a team. These kids and all of our people had a team that represented them now. You know,
yep.
And it was like a big step in a new direction for a lot of Indigenous people, and it gave a lot of Indigenous people hope. A lot of these kids something to strive for, you know. Mm. So, and the amount of community work that we've done outside, a lot of these individuals did. It just, you know, it's trying to get away from, you know, get the statistics down, give our kids opportunities, and just, you know, make sure that they can give themselves the best chance in life rather than be another statistic. So that's what that first initial All-Stars represented. That represented that sort of, you know, that positive change and that new sort of hope.
Yeah, you mentioned that it's what it meant to country and what it meant to family, and you can see that where Greg Inglis led the dance, and also recently Latrell Mitchell. Now, your cousins with GI and Albert Kelly, there's some fantastic Indigenous talent over the years. Who's your favourite Indigenous player of all time?
My favourite Indigenous player of all time is Anthony Mundine. I know Shock was very controversial, but during 99, remember when, you know, I love stats, we used to go to all the games, but then we got kicked out 2001, I think.
Yeah.
So I defected to St. George because, you know, we didn't have a team. Mm. And that was during that time where it was the Mundine Blacklock sort of show. So we'd go to the games and, I'd even go down to Wollongong and watch the games, and some of the things that Chock used to do. You just think, and I loved, back then I was a little cocky kid too, and I loved the fact that, you know, he'd come out and he was controversial and he'd create controversy. And I know that some people either hate him or love him. But it just, I don't know, just, I just loved the entertainment factor of it, you know, like that is just, it was rugby league. Like, they just used to flick past and chip and chase, and then there'd be nothing going on, and then they'd just break the line, you know? Mm. So he was mine. I used to love watching Tricky play when he was at South in 99. Again, just because he was, you know, he was one of my favourite players when I was growing up. So they're two probably Indigenous players that I really love. The modern day game, like, I still believe, like, Inglis is the best player that I've ever. I know, I'm lucky enough to have played in Melbourne with the big three, but there's no one like Inglis. I just, when he's on, you know. I've played against him. I've played with him, and
hard to handle.
Just when you look at them Origin games, some of the things that he did in them Origin games, and he's just so. Even in 2014, I don't I think people, you know, obviously Sam was the Clive Churchill medalist, but if you look at Greg throughout that entire season,
phenomenal
how
player.
He brought the ball back.
It changed the way fullbacks played, really. Yeah. Like.
Each defend.
And he won grand finals at centre, 5'8 and fullback. Yep. I don't know how many people have done that.
Yep. Yeah.
Exactly. And with different clubs too. So I don't know if anyone would have done that. And he won a Clive Churchill medal. Probably the thing that he probably hasn't won was like a Dally M, which is probably why they don't rate him as highly as other players, because, you know, you look at Thurston's won multiple Dally M's, Cronks and Slaters and all them, they've won them sort of Dally M's. And the position he probably played in positions like, especially in Origin, in centres where you're not, you know, you're still having an unreal game, but it's usually controlled by your 9, your 1, your 6, your 7. So
less touches.
But my personal opinion is, If you're playing against, you'd rather him not be. You know, I'd rather play against Slater Smith or than be playing against England.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, fair enough.
Champ, you mate, you touched on the Indigenous team in 2010. That you had a pretty good year, not a pretty good year, a great year for the Rabbits. Yep. You scored 14 tries, and you end up playing with City as well.
Yep.
Then you end up in Melbourne in 2011 after having a great year. How did that come about?
Yeah, so I played the Indigenous All Stars 2010-2011, and then City Country 2010-2011. Yeah. And 2010 was probably my breakout year for South. So I was injury free throughout the whole preseason. I ended up scoring 14 tries in 16 games, and I just had a really good season. I really liked being coached under John Lang that year. He gave me a lot of confidence just to back myself and just to, you know, believe in myself. And in the preseason in 2000. Late 2010, once the season was over, we were in there for the pre-season, and I was just watching some EDLs, which is like some cut-ups of videos of different players, just to study for, you know, the next year of who we're coming up against and some stuff that we'd done and some moves that we're trying to work on. And Big Rusty walked into the video room, and I was in there by myself, and he just sort of looked at me and he said, can you give your cousin a call? And I had no idea who he was talking about. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I've got 55,000 cousins, you know what I mean? The Blackfellas, we've got more cousins than anyone. So and then it clicked to me because Greg had been in the news Melbourne had just gone for a salary cap scandal, and Greg had been in the news about signing with Brisbane. Mm. So I was like, yeah, for sure. What do you want me to say? And I don't think he meant it like this, but he just said, just say he can have whatever he wants. Mm. I think that was sort of like a line to get him, you know, to get him interested.
Yeah. Just a figure of speech, yeah.
Yeah, so I said, I'll give you a call after speaking. So I left training, I gave him a call, just started talking to him in general, just about different things. And I just said, look, you know, I don't like to get involved in these things, but, you know, Rusty said that, you know, you can have whatever you want. And his response to me was, you know, I'm really happy in Brisbane. But all he mainly spoke about was his wife. So it was like, wife's family's here, my wife's got a job here. It was all more about his wife. So I sort of left that conversation as, you know, yeah, he's half interested, but you need to get the wife, you know? So when I spoke to Rusty, I said, you know, I think he's open to the idea, but you've got to get the wife over the line. I think it's more the wife than anything. So
happy wife, happy life.
Yeah. I said, because everything he kept saying to me was about the wife. He didn't say anything about him. So, and then anyways, a week later, Greg's at South training with the South shirt on, and he's walking around. So I was very excited at the time. I was like, we can probably win a, you know, we can go close to winning a comp now. This gives us a chance to win a comp, you know?
Yeah.
Just because of that, you know, that one player. It's sort of, you know, I think we finished 9th the year before. So I'm like, well, we got him. We're half a chance. And then I started to think, well, hold on. Greg plays in the centres. I play in the centres. And Dylan Farrell had just come through at the time. And he would have been on, you know, I was on decent money, and he would have just been on a fresh start, you know, sort of contract. So I sort of thought in my head, I didn't think too much of it. I thought in my head, well, what are they going to do here, you know? And then it started to come out in the paper. South need to clear a player out to fit Inglis under the cap. And I remember they offered off Crocker first, and then Asatasi's name was mentioned, and then another player. And then all of a sudden I get a call from Sam Ayoub, hey, pal. Can you come over to my office? And I thought, I'm, you know, I'm pretty street smart. I thought, I wonder what this is going to be about, you know? And we actually sat down, and Sam, like, Sam's a really good manager, and me and Sam get a lot. We have a great relationship in regards to how we can talk about things, and we're very open and honest. He said, look, you've got another year left to go at South, but I can get you a 3-year contract at Parramatta for double what you're on now. And I said, oh, okay. I thought, cool, that's good. I'll get to play out this year at South, and then I might, you know, I'd be at Parramatta for the 3 years after that. But in my heart, I didn't want to leave. But at the time, when he sort of explained it to me, you know, you can set up your life, you know, look at the amount of money. Back then, the salary cap wasn't big. It was like $3 or $4 million, you know. Mm. So the money that was on the that he was saying. But anyways, he rings Parramatta, and Parramatta said, no, he's not worth it. And they basically rejected it. So yeah. I was stoked. I was like, yes, beautiful, sucked in, you know. I used to say it's out. And then, because I didn't ever want to play for anyone else. And then all of a sudden, I got a phone call out of the blue, and a random number, and hello, hey, Bo, it's Craig Bellamy from the Melbourne Storm. And never in my wildest imagination or dreams would I've ever thought of playing for the Storm. We looked at them as like superpowers, you know what I mean? It was like to play for the Storm, you've got to be like, that's how we looked at them, you know? Like, that's how good they were.
Yeah.
And when he rang me, I was like, I thought it was one of the boys G'ing up. I said, yeah. So I said, who is it? And he said, nah, it's Craig. I need you to listen to me for a bit. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, you know, basically he said, look, Bo, you know, we've still got, you know, we've got basically Billy Slater, Cooper Cronk, Cameron Smith. You'll play outside Adam Blair. Matt Duffy's a young kid coming through. We've got these forwards, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you, we can win a comp. And he's saying, and he said to me, he said, you know, if you want to play Origin, you know, you've got to come down and play in this system. And, you know, he's basically saying, this is a massive opportunity for you here if you want to take it. And I said to him, I said, Tom, I said, Craig, look, I've been to Melbourne twice to play you guys. And I can't stand the joint. It's cold. It's not me, you know, it's away from everyone. I like being near the beaches. I said, but I'll give it some thought and, you know, I'll come back to you. And anyways, that night, well, I think it might have been the next night, I got, you know, when you speak, when you have a fight with one of the, you know, with your missus or something, and she sends you like a big essay message.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get this message at like 11 o'clock at night, 11:30 at night. And I was on the bed and I looked over and there was that random number again. I didn't save it. And I clicked on it. And it was this message that went for like, it was that detailed a message. And I'm like, I thought to myself, oh, this guy wants me to come here. He's going to improve my game. And yeah, on the other hand, this club are trying to get rid of me, you know? So it was a bit like, this guy wants me and this team, they want me gone, you know?
Mm.
I understood why they wanted me gone, but and I thought to myself, you know what? This is a huge opportunity.
Opportunity.
So I agreed to sign they wanted me on a 3-year contract, and it was good money, but Souths were going to pay a contribution of it. So it was really good money for 3 years, but I signed a 1-year deal with a 2-year option in my favour because I said to Craig, I don't want to commit to you for 3 years, mate, and come down here in the first, you know, first 12 months, not like it, you know, and get homesick and, you know, and break contract. He said, that's no problem at all. We'll do that. You know, you make a decision in, you know, whenever you want next year. And then so I went down and played that season. We ended up finishing minor premiers. We got beat the game to go to the grand final. And I remember the first day I got to training, like how professional it was. Like coming from South at that time, South went up to that level in regards to the first session we did was like 2.5 hours, but everything was filmed and we'd never been filmed before. Like, you know, no one had filmed training sessions. And what we'd do is we'd film and then we'd go into a weight session and a wrestling session. And the next day we'd come back and watch the film from the day before of the mistakes that we'd made. And so what we were doing was we were learning on the run rather than get to round one, do the mistakes, learn on the run and, you know, drop games throughout the year.
Mm.
And I remember ringing Dad after about a week and Dad said, how do you reckon yours will go? I said, Dad, I reckon we can win the comp. And he sort of half laughed at me, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, what are you talking about? They just lost all these players. Mm. I said, yeah, but these guys that he's brought in, man, they're like, I was down there with Jamin Lowe and he brought veterans in like Adam Woolnough and all these guys. And when we just trained, the intensity of the training was just, like, it was unreal.
Was so, Brian Norrie there as well?
Brian Norrie was down there, yeah. And we had just these guys who were just, and like you've seen over the years, Craig, you just get these guys just to do their job. And but I could feel the training, like, you can tell once you're there and once you're back at South. I was thinking, well, we beat South, and I looked at the favourites for the comp, and South's the favourite for the comp, and we were $21 or something like that, because no one had given us a chance. And I thought, well, we'd beat South, and that's how I thought. So I thought, well, if we can beat South, you know, we could win the comp. And as I said, we finished minor premiers. We only lost 4 games all year, and then unfortunately, the Warriors were like a Melbourne nemesis team, because they can just, Melbourne are obviously big on wrestle, but the Warriors can get them big forwards going forward and playing. This when they had Johnson, Kevin Locke, Vadavai, you know, that sort of era of Warriors, and they beat us and ended up playing Manly in the grand final, and they ended up Manly ended up winning the comp that year. But it was a huge learning curve for me, and I'm so glad that I did it. To be honest with you, I really didn't like it. I knew in the first month I wasn't going to be there for 3 years. I knew it was going to be a one year transition because of the fact that I felt isolated. I'm a person that plays football for fun. Like, I didn't play for money. I didn't play for, you know, a lot of people play for titles. I'd love to win and all this sort of stuff, but I wanted to enjoy the experience. I wanted to, you know, and my community work was something that I was big on as well, because I wanted to make a positive impact in my community. So when I went back to my community, that there was positive change, and kids looked up to me and said, well, we want to do what he does. How can I help these kids? That's what my sort of rugby league path was going to be about. Not about, you know, winning titles and winning premierships and playing Origin. My sort of role and what I worked out was that when I went back to Kempsey and areas like that, these kids, you know, I needed to give them sort of, you know, some sort of direction or give them opportunities moving forward.
Yeah, well, you work with the Kari Foundation. You're an ambassador there, and I'm mates with Dan Allende, who works there as well. That's a great organisation too, isn't it?
Unreal. So I met Paul Ralph when I was at South, and he'd seen the community work that I was doing. And Paul said to me at the time, he said, when you finish playing, you come and have a sit down with me, and we'll work out some stuff and we'll get some stuff up and running. You know, and I never heard of Kari back then. I didn't know what they were. And I went out and sat with Paul and looked at what they were doing. So they're an out-of-home care service. They're the largest Aboriginal out-of-home care service in the country, or in the world, basically. So, unfortunately, a lot of our kids get displaced from their families and get put with docs. So when they get put with docs, they get put with Kari. And what we try to do is we try to put them back with Indigenous families or with, back with their family to start with. So with connected family, whether it be their, you know, uncle, auntie, cousin, grandma, to keep them close to their culture and their communities, rather than be placed with docs and be put completely out of the system into a brand new world, which can lead to further problems down the track. And what we've done now, or what Kari have done now, is set up a foundation so that, you know, obviously the government will only give you a certain amount of money to run what the programs they want you to run. And then the foundation is basically outside income, that we can run our own program. So I do some lead programs out there with the kids where we do goal setting. We talk about, you know, planning. We talk about getting them from school work and doing all them sort of things. And Every second Thursday, I head out to the Reby Juvenile Justice Centre, which, you know, is obviously just like a prison for juveniles. It's 80% population there, Indigenous kids, unfortunately. But again, we do different programs out there with the kids to try them, help them understand that, you know, that's not the life that they want to be living, you know, to try and get them. Because the biggest problem at age group for what we're seeing with the statistics is when they get to around, you know, that 14 through to 16 or 18 sort of, you know, time period, because they're going from school and you've either got to get them into some sort of employment or get the young kids into you know, something that they really, really want to do. A lot of the kids, unfortunately, especially when we go to the community, you ask a lot of the kids that they want to be when they get older, they say they want to be an NRL player. Mm. And you sort of got to explain to them, you got to say, that's a great dream to have, but the statistics show that 1% of all people that play rugby league end up making it to the NRL. Mm. And of that 1%, the average NRL game is like 45. Mm. I said, so you, in reality, if you end up making it to the NRL, it's not just hard to make it there, it's then hard to stay there. And then, it's, you know, 45 games is 2 NRL seasons, you know. So I was lucky to be a part of the NRL for 10. But the majority of kids, some kids play one game, some kids play 200, the majority play 0. That's the message you try and get across without, you know, because, again, if you're putting all your hopes and dreams into rugby league, it's great when you actually can make it to the top or make it to the NRL. But, again, there's kids snapping at your heels every week. You're under, you know, you're only basically locked into your current contract. And as we see these days, you're one injury away from retirement itself. So having that, educating these young kids about education and about doing something else with their life is also very important, because the statistics are stacked against you to make it to the NRL.
They're doing an unbelievable job, Curry Foundation, along with South Cares, mate. Tell us, is there any success story that stands out in your mind since you've been working with these foundations, mate? I'm sure there's some amazing stories out there.
Oh, mate, it's just especially back in the early days at South, you know, when South Cares first started, there was only a select few, you know, sort of guys. There was myself, there was Nathan, there was Reese Wester, Buddy Gordon, and it was only a really small foundation that the club had started. And you know, we go out to these community towns because they wouldn't be getting their teeth checked, unfortunately. Like there wasn't any dental providers. They had to travel. Obviously, you know, if you're in Bourke, you got to travel 2 hours to the dentist. So what we used to do was we'd do oral health programs about, you know, keeping your teeth clean, how to look after your teeth, what food to eat to sort of, you know, stop your teeth from rotting, all this sort of stuff. And these kids would get their teeth checked, and then they'd obviously fix up whatever needed to happen, and you know, they get out to all the schools. So that was like a week long process in the off season. But then I remember a couple of years later, like, we went back out to one of the schools, one of the kids come back up, and you know, obviously we see so many kids, so it's hard to recognize a lot of them. But you know, he's just, look at my hair, look at my teeth are now, you know, I got no holes, I'm not getting any pain anymore, blah blah blah. You know, just stories like that where you see, you know, where you don't even remember the young kid, but he remembers you. Because even a lot of the kid, people, sometimes when we come out, but if you had a South shirt on, even if you're an under-20s kid or you're a Jersey flag, if you had a South shirt on, like these kids, you were like, you know, it was like, oh, my God. It didn't care if you were English or if you were a kid from the under, you know, under 16 team. If you had a South shirt on, you were like idols to these kids.
Michael Jordan coming to town. Yeah,
you know, it was just like, well, no, mate, I'm Bo. I'm not Greg, you know what I mean? Like, You've seen positive change in communities when you went back there a couple of years later, or you see a lot of, like, oh, I grew up when we first started, when we used to train at the old Redfern Oval, right? I remember how bad Redfern was, you know, and I remember how dangerous it was, and my dad lives in Redfern, so I was in there every week, you know, most weekends. But just to see the complete, you know, flip and 360, we've got an Indigenous, Indigenous Centre of Excellence in there now. You see over it all takes time, but over a long period of, you know, 10, 15 years, the whole area's been able to transform. You know, the club's transformed, and there's so much positivity that is coming out of it.
And bars and that around the area. It's unreal now, Redfern.
When we first started at South Cares, like, for an Indigenous kid to go to university and complete a university degree was considered, oh, you know, that's fantastic. But now it's happening all the time. I'm seeing a lot of our, you know, I know I'm harping a lot on the Indigenous, but I'm very passionate about it and do a lot of work with it. But, you know, we're seeing it happen all the time now. I'm seeing kids, when they go back at Christmas time, what are you doing with yourself these days? Oh, I'm at Sydney Uni, brother. You know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that.
Great stuff.
And it's awesome. just so positive to hear, you know, where these opportunities sort of came from, you know, a lot of our elders and a lot of people at the top doing a lot of hard work. And also, you know, the government, you know, putting a lot of money into it as well, just to give us, you know, as much opportunity as we could to be the best that we can. That's all we sort of ask, that, you know, you can be the best individual you can be.
And they can thank you and South Cares for some of that, like, good work that's been done over the last couple of years as well, champs.
Well, I think the club, you know, you've got to really thank the club and the owners, I reckon, and guys like Shannon Donato and guys that, you know, we're only just individuals that were just rolling out their plan and their dream as well.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the investments from the board and from Russell and from guys like that, they really helped transform this whole club, you know, and I was just thankful to be a part of that, you know, and the players to be a part of that. And, you know, without that sort of vision and investment, a lot of the stuff couldn't happen. So, you know, I think them guys, the board members, guys like Shannon who started, Alicia, who's there now at South Cares, and then also the many players along the way, Brownie. So I've got to tell you the story too, that one quick story about when we were at Urco, and this is when we didn't have the weights on the, you know, you didn't know what even how heavy the weights you were lifting. So,
yeah, there's no numbers on the plates. The pub was.
But Sutto, we had a photo shoot taken in 2015. Like, you know, remember the old season photos, and they put all the players, you know, in the one photo?
Yeah.
And and Sato had in his locker. And what would happen was when a player would get cut from the club, he'd cross them off. He'd cross them off and cross them off until, you know, until we've seen how many was left. And and then I think like 2 years later, we'd moved to Redfern. And Sato still had his little poster to his locker. And there was only 3 guys left. It was, I think it was myself, Nathan, and Sato. I think Sato, in his mind, it was sort of like a bit like Survivor, you know, outlast, outplay him.
Who's going to outlast everyone?
And
I know who
funnily
won.
Funnily enough, he still got that photo on the wall, but he only just got to cross his name off last year, you know, his head off last year. But we used to joke about it because. Yeah. We sort of say, who do you reckon next? You know what I mean? I'm saying,
who's next?
Oh, I hope it's not me, bro. You know? And he's like, no. And, you know, because we're only the club back then, and you got to think, Richo too needs a, you know, back then he said, we're going to just invest in the juniors. We're going to just back our juniors. And that's what I love about the club, and that's what makes us different to any other club, because if you look at the club, back even in your time, Brandy, they always back their juniors, you know?
Yeah.
And when Clarkey and guys like that come through, they just backed him. You know what I mean? Even guys are in the team now. There's some guns there now. That Cam Murray, he's unreal, you know?
Campbell
he's
Graham.
A junior. So, Campbell Graham. So the best thing about it is we get to watch these kids that are from our area play and represent our community. We always harp on the Roosters and other clubs, but they don't have that. And that's it. And that's what I think Richo early on, he and Russell, they just said, we're going to back our juniors. We had Eddie Payer, we had Petuli Talanoa, Eddie Pettibourne, Chandler McPherson. You know, all of these kids come through our system. And it was like, we're just going to back them. You know, we're going to back them, and then we're going to start to bring other players in and build around these guys. So, yeah. I think that's really what eventuated. And then when, you know, once Madge come into the club, the club had Sam, who had sort of 50, 60 in a row games of experience. Sato had around that 100 game experience. You know, so you come into a club with these guys who are going through this sort of regrowth period. They were ready to start performing now. Adam Reynolds was at that 50, 60 in a row game sort of period. And then you had these young kids like Alex Johnson and Dylan Walker who were just ready to play in NRL. So the balance was there, but it wasn't just a plan for like 2 or 3 years. It was a massive transitional, you know, thing that had to happen. But I think the key member in all of it was obviously once Greg Wayne went to fullback, it changed and put us in a position where we could, I reckon, we could win a comp.
Yeah, mate, that was a great journey from the football side of things.
Yep.
You've had a few career paths after footy.
Yeah,
can you take us through that journey?
Yeah, so again, when I finished at Parramatta, I played 2 games at Parramatta and I did my ACL in round 2, and it gave me an opportunity to plan and to start thinking about things post-rugby league. I'd always been in the, you know, I'd always been, since I'd played my first NRL game, I'd always known and I'd always been taught this is going to end someday. So, and because, you know, I wasn't a superstar, I knew that I'm contract to contract, so I'd always made sure that I'd, you know, done stuff outside of football. To make sure that I'd, you know, at least give myself an opportunity to do something. So when I was younger, I used to come in NG Farah, and when you were here, Brownie. Remember when you were here, Brownie?
Yeah, 100%.
I'd come in 1 day a week or 2 days a week, and I'd watch you guys. I'd watch Marty. I'd watch Joe, and I'd watch Glenn, and, you know, all these guys, and I'd see what it was all about, and it excited me. You know, it was something like, gee, this would be good to get into. This would be something to do after rugby league. So I always had it at the back of my mind, but the first opportunity that came up was the F-45 at Matraville. So I went straight into that, brought the location, set up the first F-45 there, then bought another one in Chatswood. Again, very successful businesses. And at first, it was something that I really loved. Like, I loved going over to train people every day and then seeing them get really good results. But it got to a point where I think I lost the passion for it, because I was getting up at, you know, sometimes 4:30 in the morning, and sometimes finishing really late at night. And I was like, I've been doing this my whole life. You know, do I want to give real estate a crack, or do I want to, you know, am I giving my 100%? You know, after probably the second year at F-45, it was like, am I giving myself 100% into the business? And I probably wasn't sleeping in. I was making Jess do the classes by herself. I was sort of slacking off because the business was doing so well. And I wanted to challenge myself. And I wanted to I wanted to give real estate a crack and challenge myself every day, and I really love it now. I love the real estate side of things, because every day it's something new, and you're helping people. I know we get a really bad stigma, or real estate agents get a bad stigma, but I try and be my own agent. Like a lot of other agents do things different ways, and you know they're very successful at doing things different ways, but I try and do things my way. I'd rather keep my reputation and my word intact and do things the right way. And you know what, I've met some, you know, over the past 5 years, met some really great people, some really good clients. I'll just tell you about one. I had a guy in Jennings Street, Matcherville, Gordon Hurd, his name is. I met him from my pop, and what we used to do was every Monday I'd give him the vendor report. He used to invite me around, he'd make me a sandwich, and he used to make homebrew.
Homebrew. I live so three doors up from him, Champa. Gordon,
he's a legend.
He moved the street behind, didn't he?
He moved the street behind the bed, yeah. He's
great
in bed.
Bloke, Gordon, so, yeah.
Legend.
Matcherville, legend.
Legend. And so that process for 4 weeks.
You're selling chaps?
Multiple other.
There's a load.
multiple other listings are going on at the time, but that one just sort of, it was just such enjoyable. It was so enjoyable. And I told him at the time, look, your joint's probably worth around $1 million, $1 million to $1.1 million. And we had an offer of 1-1 in the third week, and he said, take it. And I said, no. Nah. I said, you're not taking this offer. I said, we'll get more at auction, you know. And I wanted to see him get more too, you know. But I knew we'd get more as well because I'd done the process. And then so on auction day, we ended up selling it for 1.2 under the hammer, and he couldn't believe it. Like,
nice.
And 1.2 was a huge price too, because it was only a one-bedroom semi. It was only one bedroom semi in Jennings Street, and it was 60 years old, never been touched. And I remember him saying to me, hey, Bowie, I'm a millionaire, you know, like, because he was just a battler, you know. Yeah. And you deal with stories like that, and they're the ones that make the job enjoyable, and you help, you know what I mean, and you help them.
There are obviously
these other ones where you got to get down in the trenches, Brownie, and yep. go to war.
Oh, you but do, mate, that, you do. Yeah. But you got one of the best teachers there in Glenn Farrer.
Glenn's been unbelievable. Him and Marty, you know, that probably sped up my process. You know, as I said, I've been here now about 5 years, but that probably sped up my process to where, you know, I'm probably I feel like I'm in the 10th, 15th year, you know, when you're dealing with certain situations, because you're always reading the plan. You're two steps ahead of where you need to be, people think it's just as easy as going and putting a signboard out and standing at the front and handing out brochures. Like, that's all right when the market's flying. But you know, when you've really got to get, you know, an extra 50 or 60 grand for your vendor, and you know, there are opportunities to do that, you got to do your job, and that's your job. It's like I apply a lot of the rugby league stuff that I've learned to real estate. You know, the hardest workers get the most listings. The guys who are two steps ahead of the play get the best results. Like,
it's all about spending time in front of your vendor.
That's exactly right. And if you can tell them, hey Pete, if you can tell them straight, you know, if you can sit there and tell them straight and they respect you for that, then that's what you do. That's what you got to do, yeah. You know. And I always, my biggest thing is I always start off my relationship with someone straight from the start. You know, a lot of agents will go in, for example, we'll probably work 1.6, they'll go in and say, it's worth 1.8, you know what I mean?
Yeah, mm. Just be open and upfront.
That's it, open up front. It makes the process so much easier. And
then you're not backpedaling.
You know, you're not backpedaling, people respect it. Look, it might cost you a little bit of business, but you know, in the end, it's if you're upfront, honest, and you keep your name, over time, people talk. So, you know, and you can at least go home each night and sleep well.
You've got a couple of high profile clients as well.
I have been very fortunate. So probably early on it was more luck than anything. It was Sam was selling his apartment. Burgess was selling his apartment down in Bondi, and he'd had every agent, you know, trying to sell it off market for him down there, and he wanted, you know, 2750, and he couldn't get it. And I just balls up and said, Sam, give me a crack. And Sam knew me, like me and Sam were very tight, and he knew what I was like. He knew that I'd get it everything I'd had. So yeah. I said, we need to do this. And we put it to market, and I found the buyer. I worked out the buyer early on, and then when it was time to negotiate, she offered me 2.7, and then 48 hours later, we exchanged it for $3 million. So, That sort of gave me a leg up too, because it's very hard when you're first starting real estate and you go into someone and you say, let me sell your house, and they say, what have you sold? You know what I mean? You say nothing, you know? Yeah. I said, well, I'm not giving you my biggest asset to sell.
Yeah.
But now I can go there and you can say, I've got a record at Maruba for 3850 for a three-bedroom apartment, you know, or...
You got results on the board.
Yeah, you got just sold one in Alexandria Parade for circa $6 million. You know what I mean? Like different, it becomes a lot easier to get business.
So you're good for a snip.
I thought you were.
Yeah, but
it also gives you confidence too. It's like scoring a double, Brownie. You know what I mean? You score a double, you get confidence.
Yeah,
but don't get me wrong. Real estate's full of ups and downs like rugby league. Someone can tell you, well, you know, I want you to sell my home for me in February, and you talk to them. November, December, January, and then in February you go on REA, and they're probably on the line. You say to yourself, well, "What's happened here?" Yeah. You know, and you give them a call and you wish them the best of luck, obviously. But oh, look, though, they had a buyer for us, or look, you know, they did a different this or they did a different that, and
you know what that's called? You drop the ball.
That's when the coach knocks on your door and says, "Bo, I need to see you. You're going back to reserve grade." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The old saying, Brownie, that the comeback's better than the setback.
Yeah, that's it.
So that's the thing with real estate. You get knocked down, you just got to get back up. You go again, you know. And but again, you meet such good people. It's a new challenge every day. But again, you've got to be fully, you know, you've got to be fully all in.
And as our listeners all know, NG Farah is a valued sponsor of the show. And you've just given him a brilliant advertisement, mate. So thanks for your time today. Champ.
No worries, boys, mate. I love listening to you boys. Love the different segments you get on, especially the old video clips. I see Brownie puts a lot of his clips himself of just, you know, of the games he played good and stuff. Maybe if you get some games, you know, where Brownie let a few in, you know.
We're not showing the bad stuff. We're only showing the good stuff.
Yeah, tricky teams to get run a lot too. I don't know if Tricky's paying you guys or sponsoring the show as well.
All good, mate.
Mate, thanks for your time, mate. Boys. You took us down a nice little journey there, and we found out a fair bit about you, mate.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for your time here on Rabbitohs Radio.
What a great insight to Bo Champion, hey, boys? Yeah, champ by name, champ by nature.
Yeah, what a champion, mate.
What a great bloke.
Yeah, he does a lot of work in his community.
Yep.
A very proud Indigenous boy. Got him in the Indigenous team. For all the work he's done with the community.
Tell us a great insight to Greg Inglis coming to the club and him leaving. And also the bit I liked where he said that, look, I played football because I loved it, not because of the money. And he actually, if you really listen to it, it looks like he got more out of trying to help his community back in Kempsey and stuff like that. And how proud was he about where Redfern's come as a suburb back 15, 20 years ago? It was a bit undesirable place, a little bit dangerous. Now it's a real affluent suburb, boys, eh?
Yeah, well, I grew up there myself, and I've seen it change as well. And,
seen the changes, yep.
Oh, you'd know more than anyone.
Yeah, but the champs helped a lot of people, and that's a big thing.
Oh, it is.
You know, who can say that? And now he's working as a real estate agent, and he wants to do the same. So,
and that's about helping people.
Yeah, so if you've listened to that and you're trying to sell your house, you know that you can ring him and he's someone you can trust.
Turn my headphones up. My name is Bo. Yeah. I have no fear. Yeah. Letting players know the champ is here. Yeah.
Rabbitohs Radio is made possible thanks to our major sponsors. Export Freight Systems, Bourke Street Bakery, NG Farah Real Estate, Rise Foundation Australia, and the Juniors Group of Clubs. They help us out, so please support them. Welcome back. Now we have the Rabbitoh of the Week, brought to you by Bourke Street Bakery. Now this week it is Paul Nifty Neville. Now we've mentioned him in the shout-outs previously, but we didn't give him the coffee card. And we're going to give it to him because he's a loyal listener and he gives us feedback all the time.
Well deserved.
It is. Now, the rabbit of the week, a couple of people have declined to take it on because for whatever reason, they're not keen on coffee or whatever. So we're going to take a more direct approach now. If you love coffee and you want a rabbit of the week free coffee card from Bourke Street Bakery, any one of the 14 Bourke Street Bakery stores for a month, then hit us up. We prefer to give the cards to people that want them. So you can either just keep liking and commenting and sharing our posts, or you can...
Simply ask.
Send us a message. Say, I want to be Rabbit of the Week. I love coffee.
you can do a post of you drinking a cuppa and tag Rabbitohs Radio. Be a bit creative, but we're going to throw it over to you, the listeners, because by you listening to us now, you are valuable to us and you're valuable to our sponsors, and they want to reward you with some free coffee.
That's right. Bourke Street Bakery, they want to give away a free coffee to a listener for a month.
Yeah, well, one of our previous listeners, Kano. You mate Kano?
Yep, Kano, yeah.
I'd seen him coming out of his business as I was going around to Bourke Street Bakery today. There you go. We know Kano would have taken full advantage of it.
Yep.
Scotty Singles will, I know that.
Singles, yep. Man, it's, look, I love a skim cap from Bourke Street Bakery. It's very hard to beat. Beautifully presented, and our good mate Alfred down there, good young barista, and there's always a friendly staff member there to support you. And they're another business that hopefully will be opening their doors soon so you can go back down and sit down. And we like going down there and having a meeting, getting a veggie pie or a pork and fennel sausage roll, getting a cuppa and a beautiful creme brulee, ginger creme brulee tart.
Oh, some great signature sweets. Tart, mate.
Signature tart.
The raspberry and chocolate muffin.
Well, I only had 3 hours sleep this morning, boys, and I woke up, had nothing at home, had a shower, went straight to Bourke Street Bakery.
Yeah, we didn't get one today.
No.
Usually there's a call.
Is that because I spilt Mavo's last week? Spilled it through my centre console last week. You know what? My car stinks.
What about that last week, listeners? He hands it to me. He said, there's only froth left. I spilled it in my car. So I got to take the lid off and lick the...
It was nice.
The froth out of it, and that was it.
Nice bit of froth.
Yeah, thanks for the...
Anyway.
So this week, we didn't even bother. I don't blame you.
I was a bit gun-shy.
Now we've got NRL news brought to you by NG Farrah Real Estate. And you would have heard just earlier Bo Champion talking about his current position with NG Farrah Real Estate. He's a very good agent there.
Is he what? Yeah.
Yep.
So if anyone's out there thinking of selling or even buying, if you're looking at buying or selling, make sure you give Bo Champion a call from NG Farrah Real Estate.
Yep, and we've put a link to that in the episode webpage. So if you want to go and have a look at that after the show, or even press pause now, scroll down, it'll be there. So we mentioned it a bit before in the Rabbitohs news, the draw speculation, how it'll work. The Storm has relocated to Albury on the border of New South Wales and Victoria. So teams have already made a few moves.
The Warriors, chaps.
Yeah, shout out to the Warriors. Obviously, they're making the biggest sacrifice of all, whether you like it or not. And I think they're all going to become our second team. Boys, they left their homes. Pretty emotional scenes there. I don't know if you've seen any of the footage. Adam Blair hugging his kids and that for the last time, and he doesn't know how long. Shooting off in a private jet over there to Tamworth. So the people of Tamworth are going to have them up there for a fortnight, then they're going to relocate down there, and their home base is going to be Terrigal. Not a bad spot.
Yeah, okay.
Not a bad backup spot.
Beautiful part of the world. But so we don't know how it's all going to work. We don't know what the locations are going to be, but we just know that the teams are getting ready for it. And
you got a scoop on venue?
I have heard that they're only going to be using three grounds.
Three grounds.
Obviously to reduce the risk of, you know, the virus spreading.
That's smart, yeah.
So, you know, obviously you're probably looking at Brisbane will be one of them, I'd say, for all the Brisbane teams. One in Sydney, and maybe
the third one, hang on.
Central Coast, maybe.
Boralee Park.
Yeah, well, we said that. Redfern Oval, Boralee Park, I'd be happy to...
Oh, Redfern, it's got to be one. Closest to city.
Boralee Park, it's Boralee Oval.
What a spot.
Now you mentioned, I didn't know that the Warriors were going to Terrigal. The Central Coast might sound like an obvious one. Newcastle.
Okay. Yep.
Manly.
Yep.
Quite close there. So, I heard there's only going to be three, but... Who knows until we get the plan.
Yep. Boralee's got good drainage. Whenever the other grounds are washed out, you go and play it.
Yeah, we used to train there, didn't we, when Redfern was closed?
Yeah, because it's the sandy soil and the
Tugger mentioned that last week, drains. Didn't he?
He did indeed. Now, the other news is that the players have finalised a pay deal where they get 80% of their wages. Now, I think they've done really well there to get 80%, and they've already missed a chunk of the season. So... Yeah, that was well negotiated by them.
And Peter Verlandis as well.
Well, not really. They're the product. We don't have a game without the players. I mean, people love, especially members of the public, and on a lot of narcs out there, you know, want to put crap on them about their wages and whatnot. They're getting paid what they're worth.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that.
And that
they're
rolls
worth
in,
that.
And that rolls into there's no broadcast deal as yet. Now, I read a story on this yesterday, and it's a...
They're probably worth that, but going back to the financial position of the NRL, aren't in a position to pay the players that much.
I'm all surprised by that.
You know what I mean?
But now their value is 80, cent of what it was before, but that's what they're worth. Yeah. Pay them that. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's they're the product.
True, but you know whether they.
That, but they've got the money's got to be there for them to pay them that. Yeah, you know what I mean. So before it wasn't, they'll spend the money that wasn't there.
Oh, that's where the negotiation was with the broadcasters some of those digital rights and
it's still not. It's still not finalised. So like I was saying, I read an article and it's a complicated process where both sides are fighting for the best deal.
Yeah.
I think Channel 9 wanted to buy the digital broadcast rights off the NRL. But there's another story that could be worth $2 billion. You know, with the explosion of streaming services like Netflix and our own Rabbitohs Radio podcast, that's a valuable asset that they probably need to hold on to. So they're still thrashing out a deal, but hopefully they can come to some solution soon and we'll get the footy back on the air on Fox, Channel 9, radio, etc.
Well, just on that, say they did buy the rights and are looking to buy up a few things to fill up their content, what would it be worth, boys? Like, what would we go for?
Oh,
$200? $200?
You can't put a price on us.
$200 a minute, I mean.
You can't put a price. We're priceless.
I'll cop a carton of Young Henrys.
Yeah. Hang on. Let's go a bit higher than that.
Yeah, you're worth more than that, Brownie.
Hey?
We'll get two cartons each a week. Yeah. What about
a lifetime supply?
Yeah.
then we'll start talking.
Yeah, but congratulations to Peter Volandis as well, because he's come in at a tough time and he seems to be doing a great job in getting everything done.
Glad you mentioned him, mate. He is a phenomenal leader. I don't think we've had a leader in the game since way back with Arco.
Look at what he's done for racing.
When you blokes are playing, we had some strong leaders in the game, didn't we?
Look at what he's done for racing. The crowds that go to the races now on them big championship days, the Everest.
Yep.
He's put all that together.
I think he did some surveys and realised the crowd was too old, and he really wanted to attract the younger people. And if you've noticed, if you ever jumped on and had a look at their membership, if you are under 35, you pay less than what...
And you know what he's also done? He's gone to the grassroots, the country racing.
Yep.
He brought the country championships and give them an opportunity to come to the city.
Well, we spoke about that when we went to
Mudgee. And you guys are a part of it. Mudgee.
I wonder if he's available.
Didn't you have a good time up there?
We did indeed. Oh. I wonder if he's available as a consultant on Rabbitohs Radio, Peter Volandis. He might have some good ideas for us too.
Yeah, he might.
Yeah. Might be, if we can afford him.
We'll get him on.
We'll get him.
Get him on.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Pete.
We get everyone on.
On
Rabbitohs Radio.
We've got a long list and we're just going to get through it.
All right, another good show, boys. Anything else before we...
Yeah, there's one thing I want to touch on. The Fox Sports again, another survey. Sam Burgess has been named the best lock forward of the NRL era.
Do
you all agree?
Well, I don't agree with number seven, Luke Ricketson, in front of Trbojevic. I wouldn't have Luke in my top eight.
I don't agree. I think number two was Tomalama. I put Brad Clyde in front of Tomalama.
What a phenomenal player, Brad Clyde.
Brad Clyde used to do it for 80 minutes.
He was like RoboCop, wasn't he?
These players
he just could do everything.
Tomalama, he didn't play 80 minutes.
Is that the NRL? Is Brad Clyde NRL era, but maybe that?
Well, he was in it. Brad Clyde was number four or something like that.
He was a good player. Played against him. He was a champion.
Yeah. Definitely agree with number one in our own Sam Burgess, machine.
Rabbitohs Radio is hosted by Grant Chappell, Darren Brown and me, Steve Maven, and is brought to you by Export Freight Systems, The Juniors, NG Farah, Rise Foundation and Bourke Street Bakery. For more information on this episode, click the episode webpage in the show notes and please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. We'd also like you to follow our Rabbitohs Radio Instagram, Facebook, Twitter and YouTube channel. We'll be back next week with another episode. And up the mighty Rabbitohs.